Building a successful team means not just hiring the right people, but it means consistently motivating and inspiring them. And that can feel a little daunting or maybe even a little confusing when you're the business owner. Some days you feel like you're literally just trying to keep the lights on and pay their salaries. And you having to be the constant cheerleader can start to wear on you a little bit. Well, you're in luck. This is World's Greatest Boss, the podcast that helps you become the leader your team admires. I'm Jackie Koch, and I've spent close to a decade building high-growth companies, and I love learning how to build great teams. It's my mission to pass along what I've learned along the way or what I'm currently learning now so that you can steal my cheat codes. So today I'm joined by Corey Charles, and I've got to tell you, his energy is absolutely contagious. Even if you happen to not learn anything, although I really feel like you're going to, you're definitely going to get the energy boost that you need as you head on into work or as you're folding the laundry, whatever you do when you're listening to podcasts, you are going to get an energy boost. Corey is a sought-after speaker and trainer. He's been training and leading teams for over a decade. And today you're going to learn how to create a cohesive team culture that aligns with your company's mission and your values. You're going to learn strategies for figuring out what motivates everybody on your team because everybody is different. And so you have to figure out how to motivate each person. You're going to learn a framework for how to conduct regular check-ins with them and what to actually talk about when you're doing the check-ins. Corey drops some knowledge on how he really balances that line of showing your team members that you care about them personally, yet you're also going to hold them accountable to the high standards that you have and help them grow and help them do their best, which is a little bit of a challenging thing sometimes. And he really drops a nugget on how to start to look at that relationship. So I'm really excited for you to get to hear from Corey. So let's dig in. Share with listeners a little bit about you and how you got into this entrepreneurship thing.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll give you the short version because it's been a kind of a crazy story and a wild ride. But for me, it was born from stubbornness. I can say that because I have an 8-year-old, so I mm-hmm. get to get it back in spades. But for me, it was I always questioned things and I always looked for different approaches to certain situations. And for me, I was one of those that got into sales totally by accident, not the person that you can identify and say like, oh, that's a salesperson or they've got it. I was never that person by any means. So getting into the sales role and growing up and having great mentors and having great leadership, I wanted to make sure that I could give back the industry, give back to salespeople, give back to leaders in the same way that folks poured into me. But for me, I was like, hey, I've been to a ton of seminars and trainings, and I've been to a lot of those things that help salespeople and sales leaders get better. I've read a lot of those books. You can't see quite below me, but there's a ton on my shelves. And I read a lot of those books. And frankly, a lot of them are stale and boring. And I said, hey, if I'm going to do this thing, if I'm going to be a trainer, if I'm going to be a coach, if I'm going to help leaders and salespeople, it's got to be different. It's got to be me. It's got to be unique. So that's how this idea was born of sometimes you just got to do it yourself. Mm-hmm. Even if that wasn't the plan, when you believe in that purpose so much, it puts you on autopilot and it becomes something that just drives you even when it feels scary and different and wild. And that's how I got to this place of, hey, I'm just going to make sure that I stay true to that idea of, hey, I'm going to do this and I'm going to be unique and fun and crazy and wild. But most importantly, be as impactful as I can.
Yeah, I hear that. Being in a space that maybe you don't align with how it's being taught or discussed is similar to how I feel sometimes in recruiting in HR. It can be very dry and boring, and I don't think it has to be. But you've mentioned now twice, one before we hit record and one now, that you are like not a salesperson. And I don't know, but the whole vibe, you're good at influencing. And I feel like I would buy anything from you, I guess. So I don't know. Maybe you've had to work on that, but I don't know. When you say you weren't a salesperson, I don't see it. I got to admit.
I appreciate that. And there are definitely behaviors and skills. I call them superpowers. There are definitely superpowers that we're born with. And then there are superpowers that we have to develop. I wasn't born with that. I talk about my 8-year-old a lot. I have a 10-year-old and an 8-year-old and now a 2-month-old, which is life's crazy. But my 8-year-old is that person. I look at him and it's just like he is absolutely built to be a salesperson or a politician or something like that. He's just got it, even at 8. And my 10-year-old's the opposite. He's more like me as a kid, very shy, very introverted. Yeah. So I deal with a lot of salespeople that, especially coming from outside of the industry they're in now, or coming from outside of sales, and also dealing with a lot of leaders that feel insecure because they're not that over-the-top personality that you typically see. And I'm here to just tell them that there can be so much success even if you don't have that over-the-top personality naturally. Number one, you don't necessarily need that to be successful, because I think in today's age, people don't necessarily only respond to that. I think people respond to so many more things. And also, there is certain things that you can develop. For me, when I first got into sales, my peers and even my mother, she still laughs at this, but I used to, right before I have an engagement with a customer, I would say just this little word to myself. I'd say showtime. And then it was almost like Superman coming out of the phone booth with a totally different outfit on. That for me is my bright colored suits, right? So I would come out of the phone booth with my cape on, and then it was just a different mindset, different personality. All those things in the books that I read and saw, I was able to put those into practice, but almost through the shield of, okay, I'm wearing my superhero getup now. But then after a time, it becomes part of what you do and part of your personality. Now, what I will say is, while I'm not naturally that overly extroverted person, if you see me on stage, you're going to think I am, and you're going to think it's crazy that I even say that. I just need a little bit more downtime than I think the average person. Sure. So if I'm running wire to wire Monday through Friday, I'm going to crash on Saturday. So that's the only difference I see now in old me versus new me.
I have so many things I want to dig in on that topic in terms of learning things that you're not good at or maybe that you need to develop. But before we go there, I want to make sure that we hit on something that I get asked a lot about. And I'm really excited to unpack this with you. A lot of clients, just a lot of business owners, managers, leaders in general, often ask, or I hear a complaint that they don't feel like their team is as bought in to the mission, or they're not as eager, or they're not as committed, or they wish that they could get their team to be more incentivized or excited to do their job. They feel like they're just phoning it home. So it becomes then a conversation around, how do we motivate teams to go above and beyond? Because that's essentially what you want. Or how do we motivate them to go after their goals? And I think you, being in sales specifically, this is where this really comes up a lot. It's like, how do you incentivize people? And so that's really what I want to dig in with you today about. And I guess my first question is, how do you look at that? I don't want to ask the leading question because I think I know what you're going to say, but I genuinely want to know. If somebody comes to you and they're like, my team is just not motivated, I don't know how to get them motivated, what should I do? What would you say?
The cool thing is, I like Tarantino movies. So kind of like a Tarantino movie, the answer was in the question. I don't know how to motivate my team, right? So we'll hang on to that. We'll come back to it later. But one of the things I look at is that it's very important for us to shift the way that we look at motivating our team and the way that we look at getting them excited about the mission or the goal that we want to accomplish. One of the things I always talk about, and forgive me for any listeners that are going to groan at this, but you can see over my head, I have a Yankees hat. I'm a big Yankees fan because I'm from New York.
Boo. Just kidding.
Yeah, there it is.
I had to.
The tomatoes coming from nowhere. Yeah. But one of the things I talk about, and love them or hate them, the Yankees have 27 world championships, and they have this thing called the Yankee way. It is just the way that they do business. And it doesn't matter if you're the biggest superstar on the planet. Once you join that organization, you're part of that organization. You're part of that organization's mission to win championships. They have a championship culture, and it is surprising when we don't win. It is surprising when we don't make the playoffs because we're conditioned to win. I always tell the story about Johnny Damon, who used to play for the Red Sox, our hated rivals, and they used to call him the caveman. Some people will remember him, and he had this long flowing hair, and he had this big bushy beard, and he was just a wild man. He was a great player. And then he signed a contract with the Yankees, which was really controversial at that time. And I'm telling you, he had t-shirts, he had all kinds of branding, he was in tons of commercials. And he shows up for the first press conference with the Yankees, and he's got short hair and clean shaven. And everyone's like, what in the world just happened? That's the caveman. How does he look like that? Because that's the Yankee way. Like it or hate it, that's the Yankee way. That's part of their culture, because now you've joined this organization because we bring something to the table. We bring a championship pedigree. And if you want to be a part of that pedigree, here's how that looks. So I say that story just to paint the picture. The one thing that I think that we really do wrong when it comes to making sure that people are motivated in our team, they're excited, they're not just phoning in, which can definitely happen in sales, is first of all, you said it right in the question, right? I don't know how to motivate my team. The first thing we have to realize is not everyone's motivated the same. I have one person here that I can say, hey, man, if you work really hard, you can get a Ferrari. And the person right next to him might not care about Ferraris. So I'm using the wrong tool to motivate that person. So I have to understand what motivates my team individually. That's the first thing that I think a lot of leaders miss out on, is they just think there's one way to get your team excited. It's money, 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 money. Money's great, but there's a lot of other things that can get people up and get people excited and get people going. And I think the second thing that we really miss out on as leaders, as a way to get our team excited, is we forget to get them involved in the mission. We forget to get them included in what we're looking to accomplish. It becomes very much, this is what I want to do. This is what I want to accomplish. This is where I want to go, instead of, hey, here's where we're going to go. And that's why I bring in that story of the Yankees, because it's very much a, this is what we are going to do together. You give me a little, right? You're gonna give me a little bit to be part of this culture, but here's where we're going to go together. And that's where you get people really buying in, because now it's not about the thing. It's not about the money, the car, the Gucci belt, whatever it is. It's about that mission. And here, we're here for that mission. All that other stuff that comes along with it, great. But we're here for that mission.
So a question I have with that is, I see sometimes people just replace I with we and think that's all they have to do. Right? It's like, oh, but if I say that's what we are doing, they should know they're a part of it. I really want to dig in a little bit about how somebody listening to the show could actually create goals or create missions with their teams. Do you have any like great exercises or questions that you recommend leaders do with their teams to like co-create it together? Because, you know, as a leader, one, your job is to like set the mission, set the goals. Like you do have that ultimate decision-making power, but how do you also get other people's buy-in to be included in that?
Yeah, that's an awesome question. I'll give you a freebie. So I have a program. It's about unlocking your superpowers. I think as a leader, it's really important for us to look at every member on our team, identify what they're really good at. Even if they don't necessarily display that, identifying what they're really good at natural, what's that thing that they have? And then really break down on how that fits into my mission, right? And break down how that fits into our overall goal. And I think the conversation can't be, hey, Jackie, we really value you. You're part of this mission. It's no, Jackie, here's why you're really important. And the thing that you do that's super unique and different and special, this is going to get us here. Here's how you directly contribute to where we're going to go. And without you, we're not going to get there. So let's work on ways that we can take that thing that you do or that thing that you have. That's awesome. Let's come up with a game plan on how we can maximize that every single day. So you come in, whether it's you're in a sales center or you're walking into an office or working remote, what can we do to take that thing that you have and use it to make you very excited as soon as you start your day? That's going to keep you excited through the end of the day, ups and downs, the good and the bad. That's going to keep you motivated, because you're now, as a person, you're living in your strengths, you're living in your purpose, and also you're contributing to the mission. But you're contributing to the mission in a really tangible way, not this kind of pie in the sky way that we talk about it, of, hey, you're part of the team, right? Everybody says that. They say that at Disney, but it doesn't mean necessarily that it's true. We're really talking about, here's what you do and how it contributes to where we want to go. Again, going back to a sports analogy, if you're a quarterback, let's talk about what you do as the quarterback to get us to where we want to go. If you're on defense, let's talk about what you do. And if you aren't able to do what you do at the highest level, we have trouble getting to where we want to go. So let's work on making sure that you're living in your space of excellence, and that's going to contribute greatly to where we want to go. And that's how we start to really have those authentic we conversations versus, yeah, come on, guys, jump on the bus. But let's really talk about real X and O's on how every single person contributes to where we want to go and how that works together.
But Corey, I'm so busy. I don't have time to sit down and meet with everybody. Like, that's what I get. Yeah. Or they don't actually say it, but I know that's what's happening, right? That they're too busy. They don't have the time to do it. Do you have any simple advice for a cadence that you recommend meeting with your teammates to have these conversations?
The first thing I would suggest is a mindset shift, because I don't speak in absolutes, but 99% of the time, there is no greater priority than making sure you have the right people. Those people feel fulfilled, and they're doing exactly what they needed to do to make you get to the next level. So you're not hiring and rehiring, you're not training and retraining, you're not spinning your wheels. If you want to grow in any business, you have to make sure you have the right people doing what they do best. So I can't think of a higher priority than that. So I think it's a shift in mindset, first of all. Outside of the shift in mindset, I think the second piece is making sure whatever that cadence looks like. So for me, I'm big on a weekly check-in, and it doesn't have to be we're sitting down for 6 hours. It is just a temperature checkup. Hey, where are we at? Are we good? What's holding you back? What's helping you? What can I do to make sure that you're living in your space? And here's what you can do to make sure that we're moving towards that mission. Mm-hmm. And that could be at the start of the week on a Monday. That could be midweek check-in. That could be, and it doesn't need to be much more than, hey, let's just get a feel for where we're at. And then understanding the makeup of your team, does that need to be a biweekly or a monthly longer breakdown where we kind of reassess goals and we look at growth and how you feel? Because I think a lot of times leaders have people that are feeling stressed or feeling unheard or unseen, and they don't realize it until it's too late. Mm-hmm. This kind of eliminates that because you're in a normal cadence. You're checking in. I check in with my kids every day. Hey, what's going on? How was your day? What was the best part of your day today? Those are conversations that I have every single day. I look at the people on my team as my kids, even if they're older than me. I look at them as my kids, and I got to make sure that they're doing good because I want them to grow. I want them to thrive. I want them to be happy, fulfilled. And again, if all that's working together, we're on our way to our mission and we're doing a really good job getting there. It may be, hey, we only have a scheduled call Monday morning for 15 minutes, but I'm checking in on Wednesday just to make sure that we're doing good.
Thanks for addressing the mindset shift. I agree 100%, obviously, hence why I have this podcast. But not only is it like one of the most important things you do as having a team, the reality is you're going to pay for that time somewhere.
Absolutely. And twice, by the way, you're going to pay for a double.
Exactly. It's way less painful to invest the time early than to replace somebody or deal with the consequences of conflict or a bad performer.
By the way, if you have that going on, if you have a bad performer, if you have someone that's creating conflict or strife within your organization and you're late on that, you have to also look at not only the times does it cost you to reboot and restart, but who else did it affect? And now one problem can be three problems. And now we got a big problem. So I think you didn't have time before. Now you've lost 30% of your team or their mindset's in the gutter and you have to reboot all of them, right? Now you think you were tight on time before. Now you're really stuck for time. So I think if we just, again, shift that mindset and pour in early and often, then we're going to be at least ahead of some of those conflicts.
So I wasn't going to ask this question, but I'm going to because I think we kind of went there. Something else that I see happens a lot, especially with small business owners or maybe first-time leaders, is trying to understand the balance of being friends with your employees and being their boss. And I think you hinted towards a version of this when you shared that you treat your employees like you do your kids. It's you care about them. Like you're rooting for them. You want them to succeed. But how do you balance caring about somebody, wanting them to succeed, and also making sure that you're holding them accountable and making those tough decisions and having those convos when you have to?
I'm going to just come at this with a ton of honesty because I made that mistake early in my career a lot more often than not. I just wanted people to like me again. Part of that comes from being insecure and being mm-hmm. introverted and I just wanted people to like me. So one of the biggest mistakes I made as an early leader was trying to recruit friends and trying to grow friends on my mm-hmm. team, which is a recipe for disaster because there has to be that line and that line of accountability, that line of, hey, I'm going to put some pressure on you when I need to, because again, we have a mission that we're trying to accomplish. And I always think back to my parents. I have wonderful parents and I can hear it just clear as day. I remember telling my mom for the first time, I'm not your friend. And she said, agreed. We're not friends. And I was just so shook as a child. I was like, I thought I was giving her the dagger. She returned it. She did the Uno reverse card on me. But I understand it because her conversation, my mom's always been great about slapping you down verbally, but then having the conversation with you after. And that's something that I've taken into my leadership style as well, is sometimes I got to slap you down, but I'm also going to have the conversation with you on how we got here. So the conversation she had with you is her job is not to be my friend. Her job is to make sure that I'm safe, I'm healthy, I'm doing the things that I'm supposed to be doing. I'm a upstanding citizen that gives us a community. And we can be friends along the way, but we are not friends. And I took that with me. And it's funny, my 8-year-old hit me with that the other day. We're not friends anymore. And just like autopilot, I said, I agree. We are not friends. and it's funny how those things from childhood come back out. And it came out without me even thinking about it. But that's my leadership style. Because when you look at the relationship with a parent or any kind of guardian or any kind of person of influence, grandparents, family friends, whatever it is, it's a relationship of great love, great respect. But there's also that line of, hey, I got to make sure that you're doing the things that you're supposed to be doing to be a good human, a good friend, a good sibling, a good spouse, whatever it is. It's that line of making sure that, hey, we can be friendly. We can have fun like friends do. But at the end of the day, I have a responsibility to make sure that you're okay. And sometimes making sure you're okay is not going to feel good for you in the moment. Sometimes I got to give you some of that tough love and I got to give you that roughing up, which doesn't really work well coming from friends.
Right.
But it does if you have that person of influence that tells you like, hey, listen, you got to tighten up. You're messing up here and here. We tend to take a step back and listen to it and say, okay, let me make that adjustment. So that's my role as a leader is I want to make sure that we have that open, honest communication, that we have a foundation of trust and respect and love, but it's going to come with all those things as well. It's going to come with tough love. It doesn't come with just like puppy love. It comes with some tough love too.
And I imagine that you also encourage them to share how they're feeling with you in honest ways as well. How do you ask for that? And how do you have a team that actually is giving you feedback that you need to hear as a leader?
Two things happen. I think a lot of times someone, whether it's under your care or in their past, they've had that moment where they've shared, hey, here's how I'm feeling. Here's what I'm stressed out about. Here's what's bothering me. Mm-hmm. And they've been smacked down and it caused them to retreat and say, okay, lesson learned. Millions of years of evolution have taught me something smacks me. I don't like that feeling. I don't want to get smacked down again. So they tend to retreat and not have those conversations anymore. So for me, it's all about making sure that they understand that, hey, this is an open space and there are going to be times where you mess up. There are going to be times where you make mistakes. There are even going to be times where you say something I don't like or agree with, but we're always going to be able to have that conversation with respect above all else. Because we're always going to have that level of respect and it's never going to come from a place of, I'm going to come down on you for what you said or how you feel or what you're thinking. I'd rather have that conversation with you than we let it sit and it comes back up later, stronger and more intense. So I give the same analogy when I talk to salespeople that I give to sales leaders. As a salesperson, you have to be like a doctor. To be a doctor, a good doctor, you have to be able to ask a lot of great questions and really understand the full situation, not just the surface level. Because someone can come in and say, hey, doc, my leg hurts. And then the answer could be, okay, cool. Here's 2 ibuprofen. Call me in a week. That could be the answer. Or, hey, how long has your leg been hurting? What's it feel like? Where's the pain? What's the sensation? We have to be really good as leaders asking those probing questions and getting a real good feel of the picture. What's going on at home? What's going on when you walk in the door, right? What are other things that are bothering you and stressing out? What are some things that I can do, right? Asking those questions, really getting the full picture before we then make a diagnosis or give a prescription. And I think, again, it's one of those things. Unfortunately, there's no handbook, Jackie. We talked about this earlier. There's no handbook on leadership. And a lot of times we feel really excited because we may have the answer or we think we do. So we hear the problem and give out a solution. And the solution may not really connect to what the real problem is. It may just connect to the surface level. But we got to dig deeper. And that's that high level leadership really is being able to dig in deep and get the real story, the full picture.
And asking questions from a place of curiosity.
Yes.
I do see leaders asking questions, trying to lead them to an answer, right? You want to check your intentions, I think, and make sure you're asking for the right reasons. Otherwise, it will start to feel a little gaslighty or not good for them.
Like, the spotlight's on them and it's an interrogation. And where were you on the night of the 15th, right? You can have those line of questioning. And then you can have questions that come from genuine curiosity of, exactly. I just want to understand better. And those are the questions that are come from in here. It doesn't come from here. Those questions come from the gut and from the heart. And those questions are really about, I really just want to understand the picture a little bit better. And for me, I think that's, if I can tell leaders, if you weren't born with that superpower, that insane curiosity as a superpower, if you weren't born with that, that's something that is a great thing to work on, is that genuine curiosity of really just wanting to understand things and people, because that's going to get you so much more information that you've been leaving on the table.
Totally. I want to circle back to the way that we kicked off, where I asked, like, how do you motivate your team? And we talked about connecting to the mission and all of that. But one thing I didn't hear you say, and I'm curious your thoughts, is like, how much should compensation or pay or money play into the equation? And is it even important without the other side? I'm curious your thoughts on that.
I would say it depends. I know that's a cheap answer, but the reason why I say that is because you're going to come across people that like things, people that they want Gucci belts and they want handbags and they want fancy cars and nice watches. And that's great, right? Those people are awesome. No hate at all. I'm a fan of things as well. And that's going to be the trigger. And that's going to be all you need for that personality. And that's great. You're going to have other people that money doesn't affect them at all. They're there for the love of the sport, as they would call it in Michael Jordan term, love of the game, right? Some people just love to do what they do and they feel really fulfilled when they're doing what they're doing, and making sure that we give them the opportunity to be great at what they do. Teachers are a great example that come to my mind. A lot of teachers mm-hmm. just love teaching and they're very good at it. So sometimes we just have to figure out if that's a thing. And then there are other people where money is the motivation, but not for the reasons that we think. So me flashing a Lamborghini in front of you doesn't do anything. You're very money motivated, but maybe it's because you have kids and you want to make sure that they're able to go to college. Or maybe you've never bought a house before. Maybe mm-hmm. no one in your family has owned a house before, and that's your motivation. Maybe you want to put your parents in a better situation. Maybe there's a million reasons that people could also be excited about money outside of the things that we typically think of.
Right.
And I think it all goes back to what we talked about early in the conversation, is really understanding your personnel on a personal level, not mm-hmm. just on a, hey, Mike or Jimmy or Sally, they like fancy things. That may be true, but really, really understand what makes them tick, what gets them to do what they do. And really, I never want to exploit that, but I want to make sure that I encourage them to understand, hey, the things that we do every day, the little things that we do, are going to help you get closer to your personal mission. Mm-hmm. And by the way, that's also going to get us close to our mission. So I have these four things that I talk about often. I call them the four pillars that I make sure for every person that I have on my team, or that it's in kind of my care as my kids, I would say, that I make sure that we're talking about these four things pretty consistently. I make sure that we talk about the mission, their mission, and our mission. What's your mission?
Yeah.
And what is the mission as a whole? I got to make sure that we have that presence of mind, right? I always want to make sure we talk about mindset. I think you've heard me drop that bomb a couple of times. Mindset is one of my favorite things to talk about. So I always want to make sure what's going on between the ears, and how are we feeling, and what are the things that are either holding us back or helping us, and how can we tweak and adjust? I talk about the body. How are you taking care of yourself physically? Are you getting rest? Are you eating? Are you drinking, you know, mm-hmm. water, right? So what are we doing to take care of ourselves physically? And then the last part is, it's a hokey, but I guess I'm that guy. I call it connectedness. I call it the heart. How are we feeling about what's going on here? How are our relationships? Mm-hmm. How's our relationship as a leader and person on my team? How's your relationship with your kids, spouse, friends, whatever it is, right? Family. What are those relationships like? And how are you feeling about those? And for me, this is where it goes outside of just being a leader. This is where it goes into that area of, hey, these are my kids. So mm-hmm. making sure that those four things are working for the people that I'm working with puts me in a pretty good position to make sure that I got people that are going to be in a good place to do some magical things.
Wow. Those are all so great. And you've dropped so much helpful advice on this. Thank you. One thing I want to call out is, in this conversation, what I'm hearing a lot is, it's a leadership thing. Like, it's up to you first. And I heard a lot of kind of looking to yourself as the leader, and there's actions you have to take. And I just want to make sure I call that out, because a lot of people, a lot of clients I work with are very quick to say it's a them problem. It's a my employee problem. If I could just get better talent, if I could just get people who want to work, if I could just all of these things. And from everything we just discussed today, the first thing is like going inward as you, as the boss, and doing these things that you just outlined. And I bet 85, 90% of the time, the issue will get better. And there will be times when it doesn't. So if somebody is listening to the show and they have done all of these things, or they promised to go try all of these things, how will they know that the person is just not going to be the right fit? They're not willing to go that extra mile, or I don't know how else to say this, but they're not motivated enough to stay on the team. How do you diagnose that? And do you have some guidelines on when you are like,
it's time.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think what's really important for us to remember is that a lot of this hinges on the leadership, and it is a very quick answer. We do this a ton in sales. It is a very quick answer to say, they're the problem. I'm just going to get a new salesperson. They're a dime a dozen. And that's a lot of times the answer is that it's a them problem. But I will tell you, the best leaders, not just great leaders, but the best leaders can take someone that other people would call terrible or not a good fit and make them superstars. And the best sales leaders can also take those superstars and make them absolutely untouchable with the right coaching, with the right guidance. The cool thing that happens is when we have this authentic relationship, this truly back and forth relationship, it opens up a lot of doors of communication where you're going to have that moment of, oh, this might not be a fit, won't be a you thing. It'll be, we realize that together that, hey, this is probably not a fit. And when you have that open dialogue and that open relationship, again, it's like your kids, that conversation is a lot of times going to come to your door before you like, oh, you dread it of this person's not working out. How do I get rid of them? You're going to have a lot of people honestly self-select if they don't want to be part of that mission. And that's okay. I'd rather have someone say, hey, listen, this is not for me, or this is not where I want to go. This is not what I want to do. I'd rather have that conversation because that's a lot easier. That's a lot less stress for me. It doesn't affect the rest of my team. But when we create this truly cohesive culture, this culture that is all about open trust and communication, those conversations happen freely. Yeah. And they come to your doorstep. So you're not always trying to figure out how you have to move on from a relationship. Mm-hmm. A lot of times those conversations happen and you know that, hey, this is not going to fit either way. And that's when you get people that leave and they say nice things on the way out and they shake hands and we're still friends.
When I've worked in-house, because in-house you get to develop a lot more relationships than me as a consultant. I hesitate to say this on a podcast, but I'm going to.
We're here now.
I would like fire people and get hugs. I don't know how. I can't say the same for consulting because I haven't been able to develop as good of relationships with
course,
people.
Yeah.
But especially team members that report to me, I actually can't think of any direct report I've ever had a fire that didn't know it was coming and also just didn't agree that it was time.
Yes. If they're surprised, then you've done something wrong.
Yeah. I guess I want to leave it there because I think it's so important for leaders to hear this time and time and time again, especially from people like you. It's easy for me to say as the HR person that always wants to be nice to people or whatever, but like from somebody like you building sales leaders and being in the trenches doing these things, to hear you say the same thing, listen up, people. Like it's really just about building these authentic relationships and implementing all of the things that Corey just shared. And you just delivered such great, helpful advice. And I know that you mentioned a freebie that you have. So we will make sure we link it in the show notes. Where else can listeners learn from you, follow you? When are you going to have your podcast out? I'm going to put you on blast. Where can people learn from you?
I will say thank you again so much for having me on here. And just my quick shout out to sales leaders that are listening. We do need to steal a little bit more of that mentality from HR because there's a lot more room for us to not think of this as a factory and a machine. Like we're talking about people. And if we talk about people, every one of those kind of breakdown in relationships should come with a hug. And I wish you the best because that's how we build those relationships is I want you to be great. So even if it doesn't work out in our house, I still want you to be great. Wherever you end up going. So that's one thing I just want to leave with. But you can find me on all the socials. I live on LinkedIn, admittedly, the most. That's where I just come across a ton of my people. So I spend a lot of time on LinkedIn. And then I also post where I'm going to be speaking and where I'll be doing kind of seminars and stuff like that. So podcast is coming soon, I think, because you probably have a little bit of lead time on this recording. Hopefully it'll be out by the time that you drop and we can put a link in here as well. But I'll be talking about, just like I do on social media, all things sales, leadership, life, making sure that we create 360 degree human beings that feel fulfilled all the way around.
So there you have it. Didn't Corey just give you the mood booster that I promised with a side of leadership lessons? You learned some strategies for how to uncover each of your team members' superpowers and their motivations. You learned the importance of having regular communication and check-ins with your team and how to balance caring for them personally while also holding them accountable. Steal some of the language he uses too, because it's clear that he knows how to be radically candid with his team And really, that's what all of us should be aspiring to do. Give real, honest feedback in a way that shows that you care about them. As we bring this episode to a close, I'd like to ask a small favor. If this show has made a difference in your leadership or bossing journey, helped solve a problem or a challenge that you've been having, or maybe just gave you a new perspective on something, please consider leaving us a rating and a review. Those ratings really help us reach more small business owners out there trying to figure this team stuff out. And running a business is hard enough, so why don't we share the cheat codes? Thanks for tuning in, and until next time, go out and be a great boss.